A Chicken Can't Lay a Duck Egg by Graham Maxton and Bernice Maxton Lee. The title for this book is inspired by the words of Malcolm X, the 1960s human rights advocate. And what he meant when he said this is that a system which is designed to do one thing can't do something else. A chicken can only lay a chicken's egg, it can't lay a duck egg. It's impossible. And in exactly the same way, the economic system that we have today can only increase the rate of profitability and the rate of economic growth. It can't solve the world's environmental problems because it's not designed to do that. If we want to solve the world's environmental challenges, we need a different system. And that's what the book's about. It's about how to create a different system to have a healthier and more sustainable sort of economic progress. How does that relate to COVID-19? Well, because we have to dismantle great swathes of the current economic system to make a new one, the coronavirus epidemic has done part of the job for us, and so the transition should be easier. The book was written in the second half of 2020, and it starts with an introduction. For many years, we worked to promote radical social reform. We didn't do this for some moral or religious purpose. We did it because there is no other way. If societies do not change, they'll collapse. And just over a year ago, we gave up. We were exhausted, heart sore, and burnt out. Together, we'd worked as environmentalists for more than 30 years, though we didn't start there. We began in the glitzy, high-reward, high-risk world of banking, strategy consulting, and economics. Over the years, though, we began to ask some difficult questions, but found the answers, or the lack of them, troubling. Before the financial crisis of 2008, we worked in China and Southeast Asia, and we found deep inconsistencies between what we saw with our eyes and the narrative of progress. Sure, these countries had lots of economic growth, but the lives of most people were very harsh and their days endless. While millions had been lifted out of poverty, they'd also been taken out of a sustainable way of living, dumped in the money economy and forced to work 15-hour days. And the environmental impact of this development was horrendous. Plastic wastes, stagnant oil-coated rivers, stinking piles of burning toxic rubbish, and burgeoning megacities had replaced the lush green paddies we'd seen 20 years before. So we began to ask ourselves, is this what economic growth achieves? Our peers and colleagues, including those in The Economist magazine where we worked, could not answer our questions. We worried that we were part of a machine which was the cause of misery, not progress. And that was the first time we stepped back. Our questions took us from Asia to Europe, from economics to academia and the environmental movement. We retrained, learning mid-career about climate chemistry, international relations, and environmental law. Hoping that we could do something useful with this knowledge, we landed back in Asia some years later, this time in Singapore. There we experienced firsthand the choking smoke billowing over from the rainforests as they burnt in Indonesia. Again, we asked why. This time we were met with disinterest and hostility, especially by those in power. Even our colleagues at the Jane Goodall Institute preferred not to discuss why the habitat of rare and ancient primates was going up in smoke. So we dug deeper. We invested more of ourselves and more of our energy to learn more, lobby harder, and push for change. We wrote books. One of us got a PhD on why efforts to stop deforestation aren't working, while the other rose to the very top of one of the world's great environmental think tanks, as Secretary General of the Club of Rome. We addressed the United Nations, met the Pope, engaged with influencers and convened with presidents, prime ministers and central bank governors around the world. From there, surely we would finally understand the problem. And so we did. We could see that decision makers, heads of state and the bosses of big corporations were all too obsessed with making money to listen to explanations about the destruction of nature and society or what would happen without change. After so many years, we felt like we had no more to give. The time remaining to prevent collapse was too short, and not enough people were listening. So we left our home in Switzerland with plans to spend a year in Taiwan, far away from everything familiar. Shortly after, the coronavirus began its deadly advance across the world, and as the crisis grew, we saw a final chance for change. It boils down to this. For decades, most of the economically dominant governments of the world have failed in their obligations to the majority of their citizens. Anticipating their flailing, incompetent response to COVID-19 was easy. It followed a well-established pattern. It's not possible to reform the economic, political, and social systems of these countries to make them function in the interests of most people. A chicken can't lay a duck egg. In the coming decade, humanity will be overwhelmed by a series of self-inflicted, interconnected ecological crises. The impact of climate change will completely overshadow the effects of COVID-19. There's no market-based solution to these problems. Solar panels, Teslas, and some as yet undefined technology will not save us. Only a people's movement and structural reform will work. And COVID-19 makes this possible. The struggle that lies ahead is necessary because corrupt, rich world governments have been holding out, pushing back against the need for change through denial, incompetence, and an inability to tell the difference between fact and fiction. Those elected to power, those who finance them, and those who control the world's big corporations have chosen instead to protect their own uneven material wealth and power. They've continued to colonize the world's resources and people, controlling and exploiting them for short-term gain. With mounting ecological devastation, these governments and the powerful are failing in their most basic obligations. Hundreds of millions of people are being denied a decent standard of living, and without change, future generations will inherit a broken, shattered world. The time for these governments to act is not when the consequences of their negligence and folly have become overwhelming and are unfixable. It's now, and every day from now for the next decade. That's the only time societies have left to introduce radical changes to the way people live, think, and dream. After then, it will be too late. There may be an even bigger push for change and perhaps angry revolution, but by that stage, it will be in vain. The change that is needed should be led by the young, because they have the most to lose. Those who are in their 20s and 30s will spend most of their lives in a rapidly warming world, with all the chaos and violence this will bring. Young changemakers are also less likely to have been brainwashed by the economic propaganda that's killing the planet. Those who have not yet been infected with this dangerous virus which destroys and divides will be better able to build a different, less selfish future for humanity. We, the people, have an obligation to hold in front of us a burning torch to illuminate the purpose of our struggle. From this day and every day for the next decade, our goal is still achievable, though only just. Don't leave it until that struggle becomes pointless. Let's all make each day count.